The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's April the 3rd, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. He's in Normal, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Well, in agricultural news, the WTO deal on ag is dead again. Maybe. President Bush gives CAFTA the go-ahead, but he seems to be ahead of the agreement. And USDA is pushing barley research to the tune of $19 million. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later this half hour. Now, if you've been following the Farm Bill debate, you'll know revenue insurance has come to the top of the list of replacements for the 2002 version of that legislation. We'll hear today about an upcoming lecture, this Thursday in fact, to be held here on campus exploring Canada's experience with revenue insurance. That lecture, by the way, is free and open to the public. More details later. Hey, and don't forget, at the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Monday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago, on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The May wheat at 342, down 5 3/4. July futures were off 6 1/2 at 355. Kansas City wheat settled the May contract at $4.15, down 3 1/2. From the corn pit in Chicago, the nearby May contract, 236 1/2 today, up 1/2. July futures, 247 3/4, up 1/2. In the September settlement price there at 256 1/2, up 1/2. December contract at 268 1/4. They finished 1/4 higher. Soy complex, May beans, 565, down 6 1/2. July futures at $5.79, down 6 1/2. The August off 6 1/2 at 583 3/4. And November beans at 596 1/4. We're down 6 1/2 as well. Bean meal futures, 173.10, down $1.50. Bean oil, May contract, 22.64, down 15. Feeder cattle from the Mercantile Exchange off 50 cents today at $100.97.5. The April live cattle at $80.22.5. We're off 70, or rather up 72.5. And the April lean hogs, 80 cents higher today at $58.15.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, you missed a big week last week as you were out of the office, but I suppose keeping track to some extent. Glad to have you back and that we're capable of talking with you today. Hope you had a good vacation.
It was too short, but we're back. Yeah, we were in the sunny lands of Florida, but for the first couple of days there, I still had my long underwear on.
Yeah, well, I hope it's a little warmer. I'm going to join some friends in Florida on Wednesday of this week myself, so I'll be out through the end of the week and I think fly back into Chicago on Monday evening and maybe hit Bio 2006 next week, which is a big conference that's happening there. So that's some of the things that are happening with our lives, but really what we want to talk about is what's been happening in Chicago on the futures market. Off 6 1/2 cents for the beans today at 565. The corn futures, that's the May contract. November futures at 596 1/4. We're off 6 1/2. Dease corn up 1/4 at 268 1/4. Are these just a continuation of the trade on Friday after the report released from USDA that showed just a wide-ranging change in the acreage that is expected to be planted?
I believe so. We continue to price in the fundamental news there from Friday. When you look at the acreage estimate and you plug it into the supply-demand balance sheet on beans, if you go at trend line yields of 40.6 bushels the acre, and keep demand somewhat consistent here, you can have next year's carryout over 800 million bushels. If you take yield up to 44, 45 bushels an acre, you have, carry out over 1.1 billion. On the reverse side, if you have a short crop at 36 bushels the acre, you can take carry out down over down to 450 million bushels. So with the stocks and those types of projected carryouts, the trade's sort of getting comfortable or get positioned for the long haul as we go into the growing season. Those numbers are out. They're going to shift some. You know, there's talk of realigning the ratio between corn and beans, and with the markets in the opinion now we need to buy more corn acres, and how that's going to develop, we're going to learn that here in the next 30 days, whether the price of corn goes up or the price to go beans goes down is the big debate here. Same thing in the corn here. If you take the acreage estimate, plantings on 78 million acres and figure the harvested acres at 69.3 or whatever, trend line yield and keep demand consistent, you'll have a billion bushel carryout. But any type of weather concern, slippage down to this 133 bushels an acre, carryout could drop as low as 53 million bushels. But on the other hand, if we have a good crop year and see record yields up to that 62, 63 bushels an acre, we can see 2.1 billion bushel carryout. And the significance of those numbers I mentioned is yield's going to be the dominant factor, and these weather guys are going to be quite popular as we go into the heart of the growing season.
Speaking of the weather, and we'll talk about this a little bit later in the program when we pick up the weather segment just after the bottom of the hour, but over the past, I suppose, a couple of weeks or so, we've been talking about the northern part of the state of Illinois actually catching up, and we've been reading the Palmer Index, and in our weekend newsletter, if you've gotten that, we took a look at that, and the Palmer Index is actually saying that the northern part of the state of Illinois and a good portion of the Midwest that had been under drought conditions no longer that way. That's not the case according to the Drought Monitor, which is another piece of software. Actually, it's a way to take a look and calculate what's been happening. Is saying no, that in fact the northern part of the state of Illinois and a good portion of the Midwest as well as the Southwest continues to be under a drought. I talked to Jim Angel this morning, Kurt, who's with he's the state climatologist. Asked him which is the better of those two to follow, and he tells me the Drought Monitor. Because it takes in the current conditions, whereas the Palmer Index does not. So we'll follow that later. So from our perspective, things have changed overnight simply because we looked at a different piece of prediction equipment called the Drought Monitor. And it says things are still dry in the upper parts of the Midwest and parts of northern Illinois. And that could have a big impact on yield as we head through the growing season.
Yeah, I mean, as a producer, you like to see the tiles running quite aggressively, and that's a signal that you know, we've got some moisture to work with, especially here through the central belt where we got some good soil holding capacity. Now on our way back from our trip, I noticed coming back up through the countryside there that there's quite a bit of water standing in some areas around. So you're correct. The problem continues to be the north, northwest, and in the far west, see what happens out there. But the bottom line is, you know, a lot of us guys have been around long enough to know that it's going to hinge on moisture more into the heart of the growing season. If there's green on the radar maps during the growing season, the price risk becomes more aggressively to the downside. If the weather pattern dries out here in June and July, there's, you know, the green lights to the upside there. So it's going to depend on the forecast as we get in the heart of the growing season. Between now and then, we'll see how the crop goes in. There's some ideas now that it's a little too wet in some areas, and we could maybe see some planting delays, and maybe some of this crop might not get in as early as expected. So there's a lot of market maker items out there that's going to keep this thing kind of jittery. When the market really starts to be comfortable is once we get the crop in the ground and get it up and we go from there.
I have a question on the old crop corn at this point, because while many have said let's be 25-30% and a lot further on the new crop, a lot of our analysts have been a long way sold or completely sold out on old crop corn. But let's go back and catch this just a bit and say that advice was not followed, and there are several I know out there that have not done this, and old crop corn sales have not been made to completion or not made very much at all. So what do they do now when they're looking at this kind of setup? Do they wait it out, or do they take advantage of the rallies over the next month?
Well, everyone's a little different. That's hard to really make a broad recommendation, but on old crop corn, our official stance is 80% sold. We're under the opinion that not everybody will use futures and options to replace or use as a hedge item, so we like carrying a small percentage into the growing season. If you need to make some sales, I think you got to use this rally to get the job done for two reasons. One is the seasonal tendency is a sharp down from here on out, especially if we get in the field, and that there's no weather concerns. We can lose our momentum real quick, and our risk is to the downside from this price level here. So I think you got to get to where you want to be in through here and sort of cash in the chips. The other part of the equation is if you're going to be a holder, I think you got to hold it clear into July. So if you're willing to hold it into July, then, you know, it's a little bit of a different story. But, no, we've been recommending to get pretty well sold up here and get to where you want to be because we feel the risk is to the downside, not to the upside.
Anything on the livestock before I let you go for the day?
Well, just the mixed opinions there. The whole meat sector has just been sharply oversold. They've been beat up terribly here over the last 2 months in here. We've got some stabilization. The hog and pig report showed slight expansion. Anymore, it seems like, you know, as far as the numbers go, you got to have, 2% swing either way to really be a market factor.
We appreciate you being with us.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Monday afternoons.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
At the bottom of the hour, a meteorologist from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. AM580's own Mike Sola forecast for this evening calls for mostly clear skies across the two-state region. Lows, he says, will range from 25 in northern Indiana to 35 in the far south. And tomorrow, he says, partly to mostly sunny. Highs will range from 48 in northeastern Indiana to 62 in western Illinois. Speaking of tomorrow evening, you can join Dave Dickey at the Tri-County High School in Walcott, Indiana, for an ag panel outlook, including Wayne Nelson, Daryl Good, Mike Zuzlow, and Kurt Kimmel. That happens at 6:30 Eastern Time. It's free. More information later. Dave's here now with a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, WTO Chief Pascal Lamy says proposals on the table in the Doha Round of Talks at the World Trade Organization are insufficient for an agreement to be made. Lamy made his blunt assessment before U.S. Trade Representative Rob Portman met over the weekend in Rio de Janeiro with counterparts from the European Union and Brazil. Reports out of Brazil say the weekend talks moved the Doha round forward by inches. That's according to Portman. Lamy warned that time is running out before the next meeting in Geneva on April 31st, where specific formulas for cutting trade barriers are supposed to be finalized. In other trade news, President Bush issued a proclamation to implement CAFTA for Honduras and Nicaragua. But Portman says the work is not complete. Costa Rica has yet to even ratify the agreement, let alone implement the deal. And two other CAFTA partners have still not fully implemented the agreement either. Portman says the U.S. will continue working with Costa Rica, the Dominican Republic, and Guatemala to ensure timely and full implementation of CAFTA. USDA has announced it will award $5 million to a group of scientists at 19 universities for barley genome research. The consortium led by the University of Minnesota will use the funding to identify genes that could produce higher-yielding, higher-quality, disease-resistant barley. USDA released a bombshell of a prospective plantings report on Friday that said U.S. farmers plan to plant 78 million acres of corn this spring, a whopping 3.8 million acres less than last year. At the same time, USDA's quarterly grain stocks report Friday morning showed the largest quarterly disappearance of corn ever, with corn demand from the U.S. ethanol industry leading the way. Debate among traders in Chicago has already begun of whether the U.S. will produce enough corn this year to meet the demand of both the livestock and ethanol industries. Ken McCauley is first vice president for the National Corn Growers Association. McAuley says there will be enough corn to go around, noting left out of the discussion is corn yield, which has been trending higher.
This is what we're here for, is to raise the price of corn. The fertilizer, and this is kind of the traditional yearly fight for acres, and that's kind of what makes farmers go around to see that happen, and you know, maybe we ought to plant a few more acres. So I think it's all working in the right direction. Looking to the future, I don't see any problem with raising enough corn for the ethanol business and food business.
USDA's quarterly grain stocks report this past Friday showed domestic corn ending stocks of 6.99 billion bushels. The Iowa House of Representatives has passed legislation which would require 25% of Iowa's fuel to come from renewable sources by 2025. The executive director of the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association, Monty Shaw, says the bill is not a mandate. Instead, he says it offers incentives.
There are some good things in there, such as for the first time ever, we would create a retail tax credit for retailers who sell E85. And we would also do the same thing for retailers who sell biodiesel blends. Those are the futures of, you know, we've got a lot of E10 use here in Iowa, the 10% ethanol. We need to move it toward E85 and the biodiesel blends.
Currently, about 75% of the gasoline sold in Iowa is an E10 blend. Shaw says House Bill 2754 would also help retailers prepare for increased ethanol demand.
The other important thing is that the House bill would dramatically increase the amount of funding for the infrastructure program that's in place. That's where we give grants out and their cost share grants so the retailers can put in tanks to offer E85 or biodiesel to consumers, or perhaps even for biodiesel to put in some blending facilities so that they can properly blend biodiesel and get it out to the retailers. And that went up from $300,000 in the current program to $2 million in the House bill.
Shaw believes lawmakers will agree on an Iowa renewable fuel standard before the end of the session on April 18th. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, inviting you to join Dave tomorrow evening at the Tri-County High School in Walcott, Indiana. Wayne Nelson, Daryl Good, Mike Zuzulo, and Kurt Kimmel will be on hand for another one of our WILL AM 580 Ag Outlook panels. This one sponsored by Midland Impact. It's absolutely free at the Tri-County High School tomorrow evening in Walcott, Indiana. Starts at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's Eastern Time. No pre-registration necessary. Just walk in at 6:30 at the Tri-County High School in Walcott, Indiana. Wayne Nelson, Daryl Good, Mike Zuzulo, and Kurt Kimmel, along with Dave Dickey, will be on hand to explore the latest in the commodity markets. They'll answer your questions. Well, up next, Canadian farmers are subsidized through revenue insurance programs. It's an idea U.S. producers and policymakers have toyed with in the past and are now more fully considering in light of the current and potential World Trade Organization agreements. We'll hear where and how Illinois farmers can learn more about the Canadian experience with revenue insurance this coming Thursday. Recent rumblings from Washington are pointing the way to a new safety net for U.S. farmers like those in the Midwest. One of the options is to provide a revenue insurance program. Well, in April, the sixth lecture at the University of Illinois will explore Canada's experience with farm revenue insurance. Bob Thompson, the ag policy expert at the U of I, has invited former Assistant Deputy Minister of Agriculture for Canada, Doug Headley, to speak on that day.
So I thought it was particularly timely, since Doug was available now that he's retired, to get him down here and talk to anybody who can come in from the state about Canada's experience, what they tried, what worked, what didn't work, and are there lessons in that for us here in the United States as we look at alternative mechanisms for risk amelioration in agriculture in the next Farm Bill.
Headley will speak in the Monsanto Room of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences Library at 3:30. The lecture is open to the public. Revenue insurance is an idea many have toyed with as a potential replacement for current U.S. farm policies. That's because, Bob Thompson says, there's a lot of concern not about reducing the amount of money spent on farm policy, like the loan deficiency payments for corn, soybean, and wheat farmers, but on replacing those trade-assorting subsidies before they come under fire on the world stage and are mandated out of existence. This has already happened with some cotton subsidies.
There's a very high risk, I think, that more cases will be brought against the U.S., particularly in corn and rice, which is of less interest to us, and perhaps also in soybeans. So whether or not we give these things up in the WTO negotiations and perhaps get some concessions for giving them up from other countries, or whether we lose them through litigation, my sense is we're going to have to change those anyway.
One of the alternatives the U.S. government might use to secure the food supply is a revenue insurance program modeled on the Canadian experience. Illinois corn, soybean, and wheat farmers can learn more about that model April the 6th at the U of I campus in Urbana. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolandagrienergy.com.
Joining us now on this Monday afternoon for our look at the cash grain market is Greg Johnson of the Andersons here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me what things sounded like on Friday morning there in the Andersons when you first got a glimpse of the USDA numbers for planted acreage.
We said, wow, it's going to be a busy day. And we were right. Farmers did a good job of rewarding the market, especially when corn was up 8, 9, 10 cents. And we bought a lot of corn on Friday.
And today?
Today it was very quiet. We bought a little bit. People that wanted to make some catch-up sales, but for the most part, people got sold what they wanted to get sold last week, and now they're going to wait for probably the next level higher before they make another sale.
You think that the market agrees and believes USDA's numbers?
That was the talk Friday and then again today. Are the numbers really right? I guess whether they're right or not, we won't know until June 30th when to get another number. The weather will have a lot to say about that. The price rally, if corn continues to go higher, beans continue to go lower, also may see some acres shift back into corn. So this was the number as of March 1, but when we get the new number, it may be a little bit different.
And corn, of course, expected now at 78 million acres. Soybeans at 76.895 million acres. That'd be a very large bean crop.
On top of a very large bean crop down in South America. So that's probably one reason why the beans are still acting very weak, and as bad as the beans are, we have to keep in mind we're still 50 cents above loan levels for new crop beans, so they can go even lower yet.
Tell me about the basis for the beans in particular and what your expectations might be as we go through the planting season.
Well, my guess is, right or wrong, the farmers are going to be tight holders of beans once again. They've missed the $6 sales that we had in early January, and can't bring themselves to sell 550 or 560 beans, so they'll probably ride them on down. That, and the overall flat price probably will be weaker, but basis levels probably will get a little bit better. Basis levels have a tendency for both corn and beans to get better in April and May anyway, as the farmers get in the field and the movement slows down. But I think the farmers are going to be very tight holders of beans. I'm not sure that's the right strategy, but I think they're going to hold on to beans, and so we'll see basis levels improve over the next 4 to 6 weeks.
Your bids for the day?
Cash corn finishes the day at 225, unchanged. New corn, 244, also unchanged. Cash beans, 555, down 6. New beans, 572, down 7. And old wheat, 317, down 6.
Greg, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign County joins us on Monday afternoons, or somebody else from that office, each and every Monday on the Closing Market Report. In about 2 minutes, we'll talk with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago about the agricultural weather. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. A spokesman for Ameren says a significant number of the thousands of central Illinoisans still without electricity should see it restored today. But Lee Morris says power may not be restored in some areas until late tomorrow. Morris says muddy conditions are slowing down efforts to repair downed power lines. About 4,900 customers are still without power in Ameren's Champaign-Urbana service area following last night's storm. The power outages forced schools to close in Champaign's Unit 4 school district. Also, the intersection of Windsor and Mattis on Champaign's southwest side remained closed.
due to downed power lines in the area. But a spokesman for the city's Emergency Operations Center says streets have been cleared of scattered debris and most are now passable. The Metro East area of Illinois near St. Louis was also hard hit. In East St. Louis, the storm killed 54-year-old Delancey Moore. Authorities say he died when part of a clothing store's roof collapsed in the town of Fairview Heights. In Indiana, the storm caused widespread property damage and at least 9 injuries in the central and southern portions of that state. A state emergency spokesman says the storms may have spawned a tornado or a series of twisters. The storm hit downtown Indianapolis last night, just after thousands of people had left a John Mellencamp rock concert on Monument Circle. No one was injured. A forensic psychologist says Maurice Legrone Jr.'s response wasn't unusual when he failed to save 3 children who drowned in Clinton Lake 2.5 years ago. Dr. Mark Cunningham testified for the defense at Legrone's murder trial today in Bloomington. He said that untrained people are typically ineffective in emergencies. Testimony continues as Legrone's attorneys work to wrap up their case this week. U.S. Senator Barack Obama says tougher fuel standards and stricter curbs on oil imports are essential to avert global catastrophe. And Obama says the government should provide tax breaks and loan guarantees to show the way toward greater use of environmentally friendlier energy sources. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. This is your Agricultural Information Advantage. Meteorologist John Davis of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, is online now to take a look at the agricultural weather around the nation and the globe. Good afternoon to you, John.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, you know what? I want something personal to begin with. Tell me about Florida for the Wednesday through, I don't know, Monday period of this week around Miami.
You know what? It is looking really good. They're in kind of a dry pattern across Florida right now with relatively warm conditions, so it's looking really good.
Oh, I can hardly wait. I get to spend some time with some of my college buddies, and, well, it should be fun. Okay, now let's dispense with that and get on to the real stuff. Tell me about the northern part of the state of Illinois. We had a discussion over the weekend in our weekend newsletter and have been debating Palmer Index versus the drought monitor. It shows two different things for that northern part of the state. One says, no drought. The other one says, yeah, there's a drought there still. What do you say?
Well, I think it all comes down to what you're looking at. Are you looking at short-term or more like topsoil moisture conditions, or are you looking at subsoil or long-term moisture conditions? From a topsoil moisture standpoint, whereas a month ago we did have some dry conditions in places like northern Illinois and Iowa and southern Minnesota, that has really been alleviated across those locales, and I think you find it hard-pressed to find any area that doesn't have adequate topsoil for favorable germination and early growth of the crops across areas of the Midwest. From a longer-term perspective, however, we still continue to have some areas that have inadequate subsoil moisture in some pockets of northern Illinois, probably a bit more so in portions of Iowa and the southern portion of Minnesota, and that's not going to change with a couple of weeks of wet conditions. It will change with a couple of months of wet conditions, but again, that's a longer-term situation coming up, so it really depends on what you're looking at as to what the assessment is.
There are areas around the globe that we need to check in on. I'm thinking in China in particular, who's also setting up for their planting season.
Actually, it does look like they're going to see an improving situation across some of their summer crop areas as we go through the next week to 10-day time frame. That should be quite beneficial for winter wheat as well as some of their summer crops.
Anything else that we need to check in on global crops?
We continue to have to look at South America, obviously, but really from a harvest perspective coming up, which is all we're dealing with at this stage of the game, really nothing in the way of any kind of major issues down there.
And we appreciate you joining us today. Thanks much.
My pleasure, Todd.
John Davis is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, joining us here on the Closing Market Report on this Monday afternoon. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our pre-opening market report. And remember, you can hear today's futures analysis, cash grain reports, and the weather right there on our website. Just go to WILLag.org. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon. Oh, one other thing. Remember, if you're in the Walcott, Indiana area tomorrow night at 6:30, join Dave Dickey and Company for another Ag Outlook panel. that at the high school. And you can join them in Walcott. More information at WILLAG.org. Have a great afternoon.